She was quite right. He'd promised Martin that he'd go and fetch the herd immediately. He'd better go. Pauline, bless her, had all the children into their warmest clothes and welling boots, and they were already waiting for him, to give a hand. Gia and the twins could help him, Paul and Janet with the herding, while Clinton drove back the car, which was still up at Dale Farm. Pauline waited at the window for what felt like an eternity before she eventually saw Billy, the family, and Paul Janet appear in front of the house again, herding cows in front of them. She breathed a sigh of relief and rushed to the front door to wave to them, before going into the kitchen to put the kettle on for some much-needed tea. She had no way of knowing that it would be wasted again. Within 10 minutes of being padlocked up again, the herd would vanish for a third time and rematerialize at Dale Farm. 11, December 18, 1977. The rear lights of Paul and Janet's car were finally lost from view as they sped up the drive away from the house and into the night. Pauline snuggled closer to Billy as they stood in the porch. It hadn't been a particularly cheery farewell. Billy and their guests, not to mention the children, had been exhausted coping with all the recurring business with the cows, and by the end of the day, everyone's nerves were thoroughly frayed. The children, in particular, had been very frightened when the herd had disappeared for the third time, and Billy had literally had to plead with them to go with him to help him bring them back. Later, the twins had fallen asleep downstairs on the sofa, so nervous had they been at the prospect of going upstairs to bed alone. Clinton and Kieran eventually had to agree to have an early night so that their sisters could feel safer with their brothers sleeping in the next room. Pauline had, in fact, been relieved to get the children out of the way. The collective nervous energy that everyone had been generating as they sat around pondering on what was happening, had created a terribly unsettling atmosphere. It was a slim hope, but maybe, now that the rest of the family was asleep and their guests had gone, she and Billy could unwind a little. Once inside, she made them both a cup of coffee and they stretched out in front of the fire in the front room, trying to savor the stillness in the house. But finding it didn't actually soothe them in the slightest. If anything, the silence surrounding them had a tense expectancy about it. "I don't know if I can take much more of this, love," Pauline eventually muttered to Billy. "It was bad enough before, but now there's so much happening, so frequently, I just can't stand it. What if Paul was right? We're not only being studied, but we're being warned in some way to leave here. Either way, isn't it getting too dangerous here, now? Who knows what's going to happen next, or what it's all leading to? Anything might happen. If we're being studied, how long might it be before they start experimenting in some way with us? If by moving the cows they are trying to warn us to move because of some impending disaster, why have they now started doing it so much? Because the disaster, whatever it is going to happen soon?" She fell silent, her eyes downcast. "Please don't cry," she herself, "be level-headed and try and help Billy decide what to do for the best." She felt him move next to her on the sofa and put an arm around her. "We don't know what's happening, or is going to happen, love," he whispered, "but it does look like it's all get far too close for comfort. Even the kids, who were getting to be far less frightened than they used to be, are now as frightened as they were at the beginning when all first started. I'm more frightened about what's happening to them, or might happen to them, than I am about anything else." She put her head on his shoulder and started to sob, unable to control her emotions any longer. "So am I, love, so am I. Oh, Billy, let's leave here, please, if only for their sake. Please, before it's too late." He squeezed her to him and wiped a tear from her cheek. "We will, love, we will," he told her. "Tomorrow we'll making plans." He stood up, pulling Pauline to her feet. "But now, let's get to bed ourselves. Enough's enough one day, right?" She managed a smile and followed him out of the room, turning out the light as she did so. Billy was right. Enough was enough. She wanted only to escape into sleep now and put the day behind her. Besides, they both had a long day tomorrow. Billy at the farm and she back at work at the factory in Milford Haven for much of the day. Now, while he went down to the cowsheds to check on the herd, she'd make them both a cup of cocoa and lock up the house for the night. She watched him wrap up in his coat and hurry out into the night. He was checking on the herd 2 hours earlier than he normally would have done, or should have done. It wasn't like him to break the habits of a lifetime, it showed how deeply affected he was by everything. She sighed and went into the kitchen. As she waited for the milk to boil, she leaned on the edge of the sideboard and gazed out of the kitchen window, out across the dark fields to the twinkling lights of Broadhaven along the coast. And this is where it had started, right here, on a night like this, she thought to herself. My God, if she'd only known then what she knew now. If the world only knew what they knew now. She finished making the cocoa and as she did so, heard the front door open. She met Billy in the hall and helped him off with his coat. Everything all right down there? She asked him anxiously, aware that she was dreading the answer. Yes, love, fine, he assured her. The nervousness he felt about going out alone at that time of the night registering clearly in his voice. Everything was in order. All the herd was there, but they're terribly restless, more so than they were earlier. I don't know, it's like they know something else is about to happen. If they could only speak, what a story they would have to tell. He put an arm around her and chuckled, but there was no real humor there. They went slowly up to bed, pausing for an instant to look into each of the children's rooms. The twins had left the main light on in their room, bless them. They were obviously too frightened to go to sleep in the dark. Even and Kieran, in the next room, had left their door open. Everyone, it seemed, was expecting something to happen and fearing the worst. It was hardly surprising, Pauline thought to herself, not after the sort of day they had just all lived through. She looked around the door into the boys' room and watched them sleeping for a moment, before going through to join Billy. He was already in bed, finishing his cocoa, and was in the process of settling down to sleep. By the time she had undressed and snuggled in next to him, he was asleep. How she envied him the ease with which he always slept. No matter how tired she was, she never found sleep came to her that easily, and certainly not on a night like this, with all she had on her mind. All the events of the day rushed through her mind again, as did Paul's theories about what it all might mean. And what now? Has Billy meant what he had said about the family leaving the farm? She hoped so. She wouldn't be sorry to leave, not now. Just think, it would be the family's last Christmas at the farm. Christmas? Huh. Nobody really mentioned it, what with everything else they had on their minds, and it was only a week or two away. Never mind her job at the factory, packing everyone else's Christmas turkeys, what about theirs? She hadn't done any shopping at all. But who cared? What was more important was that the family was still around to enjoy the festive season. She finished her cocoa and put the mug gently on the table, reaching out for a cigarette as she did so. It was no use, she wasn't in the least bit tired. What was the time? She glanced at the clock next to her, nearly midnight. Maybe the cigarette would make her feel drowsy and help her sleep. She turned out the light and rolled over onto her back, taking a long pull on the cigarette and blowing the smoke up towards the ceiling, watching it spiral eerily upward and then dissipate in the shaft of light that was beaming in through the bedroom door from the landing outside. That damn light wasn't going to help her get to sleep, but she had agreed with the twins that she would leave it on tonight, and a deal was a deal. Mind you, if she'd known the light was going to shine straight through the door and onto her side of the bed, she wouldn't have been so magnanimous. She couldn't even shut the door to block it out, either. That was another condition she had agreed to, she'd leave their door open that night. She inhaled deeply on the cigarette and noticed her hand was trembling slightly. Memories of the silver-suited figure at the window suddenly flashed into her mind. And the tall shadows that Lan had seen entering this very room on two occasions and the silver hand that had touched her on the arm as she slept and later immobilized it. She hurriedly extinguished the cigarette and then rolled over onto her right side, into her customary sleeping position, curled up and facing Billy's back, so they fitted together like spoons. She pulled the covers up a little, so that only her crossed forearms were visible on the pillow in front of her. Please, let her fall asleep soon. Oh hell. It was useless. She adjusted her position slightly. The more she tried to sleep, the more awake she felt. And, somehow, the more agitated and nervous. That light from the landing didn't help, either, the way it shafted straight down onto her, sending a beam of light to illuminate her pillow like that. It just missed her face, thank goodness, but lit up the backs of her hands and her forearms as brightly as day. She focused on the back of her hand, studying its contours, the pores in the skin, the blemishes, the perfect arrangement of little hairs. She smiled to herself. Why bother with counting sheep, when you can count the little hairs on the back of your hand? She let her gaze wander down and along her forearm. Funny, she thought, how such an isolated beam of light, in the dark on one spot, seems to bring everything into such relief. And what a light! It seemed to be getting brighter all the time. Dazzlingly so. She should close her eyes for a second. It was obviously optical illusion, but perhaps you could strain your eyes king at something so closely in such conditions? She closed her eyes for an instant, then stretched the RS of one hand across the pillow and rubbed them gently. That was better. Or was it? Opening them again made the light seem all more dazzling. All she could see in front of her now the reflected glare of the whiteness of the pillowcase beneath her, and the fleshy outline of her hand and arms crossed in front of her face. And, wait a minute, what does that? Strangest thing, like a transparent plastic tube some sort with what looked like a metal rod on the end it. Standing on her forearm, suspended over it, sticking it? Christ, what was that? Damn that bloody light. Why was it suddenly so bright? It wasn't a strain, it was brighter. Where was it coming from? What the hell was happening here? She must have dropped off for a minute, be imagining this. The bedroom door must have blown open, letting in the glare from the hall. She should close it. Get up and close it. Get up, now. But wait. This felt. She wasn't lying down, was she? Dot. No, she was upright, curled up, hunched forward, arms across her face. But sitting up now. She wasn't lying down anymore. Wasn't in bed lying down anymore, she was sitting, but where? Drop her arms. She must drop her arms. Look into the light, concentrate, focus, look around. She dropped her arms slowly to her side, instinctively shying away from the brightness of the light as she did so and peering sideways into the glare. Was she just sitting on the side of the bed, staring into the glare of the light in the hall with sleepy eyes? Surely she was. Her eyes were clearing now, or the light in front of her was dimming, and she could make out details, shapes in front of her. Yes, the light was dimming. She could see now. She could see clearly. But what? What was all this? What was this place? Where was she? She looked around nervously. This wasn't possible. It couldn't be. She shouldn't be here, she couldn't be here. She was at home, right now, she was at home. She was in bed. She was with Billy. She couldn't be here. She didn't belong here. What was this place? Who are these people? What did they want of her? A dream. This must be a dream. Mustn't it? Dear God, it must be. But how? How could it be, when it felt so real? Her nightdress, she was even wearing the right nightdress. She could still taste the cocoa she had been drinking and the cigarette she had been smoking. God help her. This was real, it was happening, she just knew it. She must concentrate, look hard around her. She was sitting on a bench, a long bench made out of what looked like white plastic molded into the white plastic wall she was leaning against. The bench, and the wall, stretched away to her left in a wide semicircular shape. She was in a domed room. And at the end of the bench, at the end of the semicircle, an enormous screen filling the opposite wall. Dotted with lights that seemed to be flashing silently in sequence. Red. Blue. Yellow. Dot. Red. Blue. Yellow. Green. And who was that? In front of the screen. A chair, there was a chair with a figure seated in it. A figure she could only see in silhouette against the myriad of flashing lights. And to the right of the screen, off to her right-hand side? Just a void, a black void, a shadow perhaps? And more silhouettes. No. Wait. They were moving forward now, slowly, towards her and stopping, still shrouded in the half-light. Two figures she could make out, two figures. The same height and shapened. Identical, they looked identical. Two. Women? They looked like women. Women in what looked to be dark-colored, matching sweaters and skirts. And both with long dark hair. Just standing, side by side, opposite her, across the expanse of white floor that divided them, just looking at her, out of the half-shadow, saying nothing, doing nothing. And further to the right, framed in shadow, the dim rectangular glow of an entrance, a doorway, a ramp leading down to, what? She inched forward on the bench and leaned outwards try and make out the detail outside, the source of the dim light that was illuminating the entrance. A ramp? Yes, it was a ramp, leading down to, my God, a road, the main road, near Ripperstone Farm? Surely not? But yes, she could make it out clearly now it was that road. She recognized it immediately, even the dim glow that was somehow illuminating the portion of it that she could see. And now, what was this? More shapes. People. There were people approaching the ramp out of the darkness and mounting it. How many? Dot. 3. 4. There were 5 and. Wait. They were, yes, human, and all women, women like her. But who? Did she know them? She couldn't tell, not in the dimness of the light and from distance, however hard she strained to see. If only someone would call out, or perhaps she should. No, better not. But it was so quiet. She sat back, leaning against the wall again. God, who was that? Someone, right next to her at her shoulder. One of the two men who had been looking at her from across the room. But how? How had she got there? And now she was looking at her. Closely. Staring, just staring with those blinking eyes. Blue eyes. Clear blue eyes, like the eyes Clinton and Rosa had described after those two mysterious visitors had called at the Farm and Knee Hotel. Dot. And that high forehead, the same. And the sleeked back hair, though longer than either of them had described. Dot. Maybe she was the woman of her species. The sweater and the skirt seemed to make that clear. And the material, it was like the bluish tweed of the suits of those other two visitors. Yes, this must be the female equivalent, surely? Or, more likely, according to Paul's theory, a sort of specially contrived human-looking illusion to make her, and the others, feel more at ease. A disguise? That wax complexion certainly didn't look real. What should she do? Those eyes, those clear, unblinking eyes gave nothing away, and there was no facial expression to indicate what she or it felt. And herself? This was just too incredible, too fantastic but frightening? No, she felt no fear, only fascination and wonderment. She needn't feel frightened. She knew that. But how? She just knew. The more the figure stared unblinkingly at her like that, the more she knew that fear was unnecessary. What had she to be frightened of? Had she been hurt? Had she ever been seriously hurt? No, of course not. What purpose would it have served to hurt her? And Billy, or the family, had they ever been hurt? Of course not. They had been frightened, maybe, but never harmed. It couldn't be helped if people were frightened by what they didn't understand, but if a little fear could lead to a greater understanding, then even that discomfort was worthwhile. Wasn't it? No. She had no need to worry, and, besides, she was going home now. Now? How? How could she be here and then suddenly be at home? She had to ask the figure. It was going now. Standing. Its shape silhouetted in the bright lights on the domed ceiling above. She had to squint up into the light to make it out, but even then it was hopeless. They were too bright. She'd have to shield her eyes against it, cross her arms across her eyes, and then, better, that was better, and the light seemed to be dimming now. And dimming. She could take her arms away and look now. Nothing. There was nothing in front of her. Just the ghostly white shapes of her hands, lying on the pillow in front of her, picked out by the beam of light shining through the door from the hall outside. And Billy, the dim outline of Billy curled up in front of her. She closed her eyes and went to sleep. Smiling. 12, December 19, 1977. Billy grunted and looked blearily around the room. Pauline was standing over him, smiling down at him, with a breakfast tray in her hands and a broad smile on her face. "Breakfast in bed for my lord and master," she chuckled. "Wakey, wakey, it's 7 o'clock. Billy looked over his shoulder at the clock, on the table on her side of the bed, feeling totally disorientated. An early call so he could have breakfast in bed? What on earth was going on? He propped himself up groggily on his elbows and blinked up at her. "Thanks, love. What have I done to deserve this?"
"Absolutely nothing," she said, chuckling again and leaving the room briskly, "so make the most of it. I can't stand here nattering, I've got the kids' breakfasts to make." Then she was gone. He rearranged the tray more comfortably on his lap and savored the sight in front of him. Eggs and bacon, sausage, tomatoes and even mushrooms. Toast and marmalade. A pot of tea instead of just a cup. He smiled to himself, then frowned. On a Monday morning? All this on a Monday morning? Very strange, especially as Pauline had to get off to work herself as well as making breakfast for the kids. Quite apart from all that, she'd been so shaken up by everything that happened the day before, he'd even planned to bring her tea in bed this morning and make the kids breakfast, so that she could have a bit of a lion. And now this? She was probably trying to put a brave face on things. Or, more likely, she was relieved at the thought of their agreement to quit the farm. Good God. In the cold light of day he realized just what the move was going to entail and all the planning that would have to be done. Ripperstone Farm wasn't only their home, it was his livelihood. Trying to find another position as a tenant farmer wouldn't be easy. Then there were the kids and the problems involved in rearranging their education. It was certainly going to be a daunting task, but as they had both agreed the previous night, enough was enough. They had endured the phenomena, whatever they were, for very nearly a whole year, hoping that each time something happened it would be the last time. But it never was. More to the point, it had got worse. He finished his breakfast and pushed the tray away, leaning back against the headboard of the bed and lighting up a cigarette. There would be no real chance to talk to Pauline about moving plans this morning, but he'd prolong his tea break at 4 o'clock that afternoon, when she had got back from work, and they could talk then. In peace and quiet. He could hear the kids clumping around, up and downstairs, in their normal morning panic to get off to school on time. How would they feel about moving, he wondered. It was true that they had been as shaken up as he and Pauline had been over what had happened the day before, but it was amazing how quickly children got over that sort of thing. They had all made a lot of friends at school, and Clinton at his local job, and they wouldn't want to leave them all behind. But it was for their own good, as they would certainly appreciate. He put out his cigarette and swung out of bed. His early call would mean he could languish in a hot, relaxing bath for longer than normal, as well. He'd appreciate that luxury later on, for sure, what with all the guaranteed tensions the day promised. Billy looked at his watch. 4 o'clock. Great. Pauline would be back from work at any time and have the kettle on, and he certainly needed a cup of tea. He looked around him, surveying the scene around the paddock and then making a mental check that he'd done everything that had to be done. Then he set off up the drive in the direction of the farm. He'd be glad to get into the warm. He couldn't understand why he was so cold. It was normally so uncannily still and warm around the farm buildings, but today, for the first time that winter, it had been windy and bitterly cold. Most odd of all was that the thermometer confirmed it was no colder than it had been for weeks. Not only that, but he'd been noticing all day long that the trees around the farm, and the sky overhead, were filled with birds. It was all very weird. He hurried into the house, discarded his hat, coat and boots in the hall and was soon huddled over the open fire in the front room. Pauline had heard him come in and was soon at his side with a mug of tea. "Kids in the kitchen?" he asked her. "That's right," she nodded. "I told them to stay put because we wanted to talk." "You do want to talk, don't you, love?" Billy looked at her quizzically as he sipped his tea and savored the warmth of it. She looked so bright-eyed and bubbly, considering what they were about to discuss. In fact, she looked more effervescent than he'd seen her looking for goodness knows how long. Compared to the sobbing helpless person whom he had consoled in this very room only the night before, it was a miraculous transformation. "Yes, love. Remember what we were discussing last night? We've got a lot of talking to do, I reckon. He beckoned for her to sit down next to him, but she patted him on the shoulder instead and dismissed the idea. Not now, love, but I'll tell you what, why don't we drive over to my parents in Milford Haven this evening with the kids, after supper, and we can pop out on our own during the evening for a drink and talk then. He looked up at her, frowning now. But I thought oh well, okay love, we'll do that, then. She patted him on the shoulder again, smashing. Now, you carry on getting yourself warm while I finish getting the kids tea. She swept out of the room. Billy gazed contemplatively into the fire. He couldn't understand it. Going to see her parents that night? She hadn't ventured further than the front door at night for months, certainly not since winter had started and the evenings had drawn in so much earlier. He shrugged to himself. He was past trying to understand anything that happened around this place anymore. One thing was certain, though. It should be an interesting evening. Dale 13 miles. Billy sighed as he saw the familiar sign that heralded fact that they were nearly home. He'd been glad to get back. He'd had enough of this day. It had all been altogether too confusing. Pauline had been more chirpy and full of good humor that evening than she'd been for a long time, and not in the least bit nervous of being out at night or even driving down this gloomy country lane where she had first been chased by that globe of light. At one point in the evening she had even invited her parents to come and visit them again at the farm and had assured them that everything was all right there now. He determined to talk to her about that, in private, when they got home. She had no right to make such unfounded assurances, especially in front of the children and particularly in view of the fact that they still had to break the news to them about leaving the farm. Or were they? That was something else. When he and Pauline had popped out a drink during the evening and he'd tried to discuss what they were going to do on that score, she dismissed the subject out of hand as though there was no problem at all anymore. He just couldn't begin to understand it. Mum? The sound of Gian's voice broke the silence and his train of thought. He was leaning over from the back seat, tugging at Pauline's sleeve. Mum. Look up there, he was insisting, pointing between them, up into the sky in front of the car. Billy bit his lip. He felt inclined to tell Gian to shut up, so frayed were his nerves, but he thought better of it. Such a sudden demand from Gian in this particular place, at this particular time of night, would normally have reduced Pauline to a nervous wreck in view of what had happened here in the past. But not now, it seemed. What is it, love? She asked him calmly, half turning in her seat to see exactly where he was pointing. There, there, I can see it too, Lan was now squealing, as she pushed her way forward between the front seats to get a better view. It's a light, a bright light, a yellow light, see it? Look, up there. Moving really fast across the sky in front of us. Yes, yes, I see it now, Pauline was saying, excitement registering in her voice but not, Billy noted, any sense of panic. He looked up into the sky himself, high over the gloomy outlines of the trees that bordered the road ahead, and then he saw it as well. Clearly distinguishable from the immobile, twinkling stars in the clear sky, a dizzyingly bright yellow spot of light was racing across the heavens. He slowed the car to a crawl. What the hell is that? He found himself muttering, shooting star? Comet? It's not an aeroplane, that's for sure. The words trailed away. As they watched, it suddenly stopped for an instant, shot vertically upwards at tremendous speed, stopped again and then sped off in the same direction as before. See that, Dad, see that? Gian was insisting, tugging at him. Billy nodded. It's just like before, just like what we saw before, but higher up, isn't it, Mum? He was saying excitedly. And it can't be any of those things you said, because comets and planes don't do that, do they? It can't be ball lightning, either, not behaving like that, nor a satellite. Billy drew the car to a halt. Gian was right. He was absolutely right. But hold on, what was this? The light had stopped again and seemed to be dropping out of the sky, growing brighter as it did so. Lower and lower. Almost on the tree-silhouetted skyline. and now gone, as if into the trees. What happened? Where did it go? Gia'an was demanding. Into the trees. It must be near the farm, then. Mustn't it? Gia'an.